Peter de Graaf is RNZ's reporter based in Northland. He's in Kirikiri, in fact. Morena, Peter.
Hello, Catherine.
So many of our arts and cultural institutions are really, really holding on by their fingernails in some instances, certainly under stress. And what's happening with the Huntavasa Arts Centre in Whangarei?
Yes, that's definitely the case with the Huntavasa Arts Centre. So just for the listeners who aren't familiar with it, this is that really quirky, colourful building that opened at the town base in Whangarei in 2022. So it's got quite a few claims to fame. It's the last building in the world completed to a design by the late Austrian artist and environmentalist Friedensreich Huntavasa. There's a tongue twister. It's got the world's biggest collection of his art outside Vienna. It's got New Zealand's only gallery dedicated specifically to Māori art. And it's got a rooftop forest, which is my favourite bit. Now, it's really put Whangarei on the map. So, you know, for years, Whangarei had this problem where people just saw it as a kind of a toilet stop on the way between Auckland and the Bay of Islands. But, you know, now it's really an attraction in its own right. It's got the Huntavasa. It's got this, you know, beautifully upgraded town basin area. But the catch is, of course, it's at risk of becoming a financial millstone for Whangarei ratepayers. Now, it was built mostly without council funding. So there was a years-long fundraising campaign, lots of big donations, and also a big chunk from the Provincial Growth Fund. And once it was open, it was supposed to be self-funding, you know, just through ticket sales and souvenir shop sales, that kind of thing. But unfortunately, the calculations were all based on pre-COVID tourist numbers. And since then, as everyone knows, we've had lockdowns, road closures, and tourist numbers that still haven't bounced back to where they were before COVID. So there was some kind of preparation for this. So the centre has a financial backstop, and that's in the form of a 10-year, $1.25 million contingency fund, just to get it through any tough patches. But that money was supposed to last for 10 years, and at the current rate, it's going to run out in October 2025. And if that does happen, it's quite likely the centre's going to have to go cap in hand to the council for more money. And you know, if that does happen, to say that would be controversial would be putting it pretty mildly.
Yeah, indeed. Are there alternatives? I mean, I'm not sure how many museums and cultural institutions tend to be fully self-funding. So I guess the numbers done, as you say, pre-COVID are now being tested. But are there any other ways of it being supported, given that it is a tourist attraction? Is there anyone else who can stump up some money, or is everyone in the same boat right now?
Well, I think you're right. There's no obvious other sources of money. And as you say, it also is one of very few museums and art galleries in the country that doesn't receive council funding. I mean, I can't think of any Te Papa that receives central government funding even. And even if you look right next door to the Huntavasa Art Centre, the Whangarei Art Museum, it's run by the same trust, but that gets $700,000 a year in council funding. So it's a real conundrum. And as the head of the trust says, Bill Shepherd, so you've got this centre that can't make enough money to be self-funding. It might have to be bailed out. Not great for ratepayers, but at the same time, it does bring a lot of extra visitors to the town. So even if they don't go inside, you know, they're still going to cafes, they're going to restaurants, they're staying in hotels. And one study has put that contribution at $26 million a year. And that is not small change in a place like Whangarei.
So when does the, you know, crisis point come?
Well, October next year, if things keep tracking as they are. So the summer just gone was better than expected. You know, that might put the crisis point off a little bit, but it's not looking too hopeful if you're a ratepayer.
Okay. Now, speaking of the great rates debate, what's the rescue helicopter funding controversy?
Yes, rates, more rates. So just like everywhere else in the country, Northland's four councils are setting their long-term plans at the moment, and most of them are coming back with proposals for double-digit rates rises. There's a whole bunch of reasons. You know, inflation, roads got smashed during last year's storms, and the end of Three Waters. That means a whole bunch of very big, scary costs come back to the councils. So our three district councils are proposing rates rises of around 17, 18%. Now, only the Northland Regional Council is bucking that trend, and they're even offering ratepayers two choices of rates rises. One is 2.9%. They call this the bare minimum, and that would mean really just doing the minimum just to keep the lights on, really. And the other option is 11%, which would mean sticking to core business, but doing it better. Now, you'd think people would be delighted, right? But there has been an outcry, and the issue here is, what do you have to cut to bring the rates rises down? And the proposal is to drop the emergency services funding. So over the years, the Regional Council, they've stepped into a whole bunch of areas that weren't traditionally Regional Council responsibilities because there were funding shortfalls. So one of those is sports facilities, and another is funding rescue services. So that's the likes of Surf Lifesavers, Maritime Radio, and the rescue helicopter. So at the moment, that chopper gets about 85% of its funding from ACC and the Health Ministry, but the rest comes from the community, and that includes about 500,000 from ratepayers via that Regional Council levy. So neither of those two proposals on the table at the moment, even the 11% one, include the emergency services funding. If the council backs down, if they do back down, and that may well happen, there's been quite a flood of submissions and, you know, media stories, that would mean an extra $12 per year per household to reinstate that levy.
The service surely is seen as essential, though, is that right?
Absolutely, yes. And there is no question of it closing or folding. You know, the Rescue Helicopter Trust, they're adamant that they will keep going, but, you know, it will be difficult. If they have to suddenly find an extra $500,000 by June, that's a very, very short lead-in time. They will struggle. It'll be very challenging. And if people out there might be wondering why this outcry, why do people seem to be keen to pay more rates? And it's all to do with Northland and its dependence on the rescue helicopter, because, you know, we've canvassed this many times. It's a very spread out area. The roads are terrible. If you are in a car crash, say somewhere like Te Kau, which is north of Kaitaia, and you have to get to Whangarei Hospital quickly. So that's the only tertiary hospital up here. That's right down the bottom end of Northland. And remember also that State Highway 1 has been closed south of Kaitaia for the last 2 years. So it's about 3.5 hours by road in the back of an ambulance. And parts of that road are diabolical. So you don't want to do that. You want the rescue helicopter. Feedback on that one closes at the end of this week, if people want to make a submission.
I was looking for some good news, but unfortunately it's a bank shutting down, the last one in Maunganui.
Yes. Yes, well, this is all too familiar, really, isn't it, to anyone who lives in rural New Zealand? So, yep, Maunganui has lost its last bank. It was not a full services bank. It was a Kiwi Bank agency in the Foursquare. So that closed at the end of March. Now, Maunganui is not a big town, but it is a, you know, very busy tourist spot. Who hasn't heard of the Maunganui Fish Shop? And it's also a service town for a whole lot of little towns and settlements around Doubtless Bay. So it now joins a long and growing list of Northland towns with no bank, and some towns have also lost their ATMs. Now, to be fair to Kiwi Bank, I should say they have been the only bank in Maunganui for a very, very long time. So yeah, credit to them for that. But you know, every time this happens, the banks say people are changing the way they do their banking. There's not much demand for physical branches. And all that's true, but it does overlook two really important groups. And one is the businesses, so they still need to deposit their cash taking somewhere and get change. And the other is the elderly. And you know, some of them just, they're not computer savvy, or they don't have a cell phone, or even if they, you know, are computer savvy, they are often afraid of internet banking because scams are just so prevalent. So what happens is you end up with a whole group in society who are shut out of the economy. Now, as for the business owners, so they are now driving to Kaitaia to do their banking, and that is about 45 minutes each way, and some are driving even further, all the way to Kerikeri or Paihia. And you've got to do that in business hours, so if you own a shop, that means you've got to find someone to look after your shop for 3 hours at a time while you go off and do your banking.
Look, I've heard it before, people doing the round trip to do this, you know, 45-minute drives or whatever in the district, and unfortunately now affecting the Maunganui locals too. There's an iwi-led drought relief scheme. What's it doing, and how successfully?
Yes. Now, this is a bit of uplifting news, I think, anyway. So it might be hard if you're living on the West Coast to remember having a drought, but Northland, we've clocked up 8 or 9 of them since 2009. So many, I've lost count. So I'm not sure the exact number now, but the 2021 was really brutal, and that caused a lot of hardship across Northland. And you have to remember that 50% of Northlanders are not connected to a council water supply. Now, they completely depend on rainwater, bores, or streams. And of course, all those things dry up in a drought. So that big drought finally pushed some councils into action. But often, it's the iwi who can respond more quickly because they're probably less tied down by bureaucracy and they're close to the ground. So they know what's needed and where. So Far North iwi Te Au Pauri, they managed to get $8 million in drought relief funding from the National Emergency Management Agency. And since then, they've been storming around Far North, installing rainwater tanks for needy families. So I was lucky enough to go along to one of these installations last Thursday. That one was in Waipapakaurī, just north of Kaitaia. And there, the program was just installing its 305th tank. And that was for great grandma, who quite often has to look after her mokopuna, who have some serious health issues. But her only water comes from her bore, and it's kind of horrible. It stains everything yellow, it tastes bad, you can't drink it. She has to drive to town constantly to buy bottled water for the kids. She can't even bathe the kids in the water, it's that bad. So now, though, as of Thursday, she's got her own 25,000 litre water tank, and she and her mokopuna can drink from the tap for the first time. Something a lot of us just take completely for granted, but for them, it is a life changer.
Absolutely, and
Now,
this scheme is ongoing, is it?
they probably have enough money to do 600 tanks, so they'd be about halfway through.
Wow.
So that is a lot of people will benefit from that.
For sure.
Also, the workers benefit. So kind of doubles as a youth training scheme. So a lot of the people doing the installations, these are just young fellas who've been unemployed for a year, sometimes more. Some have been living in emergency accommodation. And I met half a dozen of them last week, and it's life-changing for them too, because for the first time they're earning a wage, they're learning real life skills, they're paying their rent, and maybe even better, they're getting a real sense of achievement
Getting a
because they're
buzz out of
helping
it.
people.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh,
Thanks
just
so much.
help.
Thank you. Peter de Graaff, who is with RNZ in Northland.